Welcome back to Franchise Festival. I'm your host, Christian Skipper, and this is just a bonus episode covering some outtakes from episode 15, Spirit Tracks. Much like with Twilight Princess earlier in the year, bear in mind that these will be more lightly edited than our normal fare, so you might encounter a few more kind of audio quirks here and there. We're using this type of bonus episode to gauge the interest in Patreon backer rewards ahead of launching a Patreon in 2021 to accompany Season 2, so be sure to let us know what you think by emailing us at franchisefestival@gmail.com or by reaching out to us on Twitter under the handle @franchise_fest. I'd also like to take this opportunity to plug our new streaming channel, which you can find over at twitch.tv under the name Franchise Festival. We're streaming every Sunday night at 6 p.m. Eastern, as well as intermittently throughout the week. Be sure to join in the chat and let us know what you think. Now, without further ado, on to some outtakes. Our first set of clips concerns Fire Temple boss Kragma, how the Tower of Spirits evolved over the course of development, and collectibles and minigames from throughout Spirit Tracks. Jasmine, what did you think about the boss Kragma?
I can't say I was really a fan.
Yeah.
I will admit, I save scummed the boss key minecart thing before this, and I save scummed this boss a lot. I don't know what it was, but I had trouble hitting the parts of his body that you needed to hit with arrows.
I did too.
I hit some of them, and then like the other parts, I think there were the parts that moving, the parts that were moving away from you.
Yeah.
I just could not hit
No,
them.
There's a problem with the depth perception here. I don't think it quite conveys the space well. There were a number of times, actually, even when I was... So just to set the scene for listeners, this is a gigantic sort of magma golem that's looming up over a giant pool of lava, and Link is on a pretty wide stone platform. And so Link needs to use his bow to strike weak points on the boss. And then hop in a minecart to travel up around the boss, strike more weak points, and then eventually topple the boss with a shot to the back of its head, and then wail on it while the boss is leaning down on the ground.
I thought it was a shot to its eye, but it doesn't
really matter. Oh, okay. You got it. It's one of the two. Link needs to somehow disable the boss with a headshot of some sort.
Right.
I struggled with this boss too. I nearly died on this section and very narrowly coasted through. But the biggest problem that I had, even while down on the ground, was that sometimes the weak points would appear to be on the same level as Link, but his arrows would bounce off.
Right.
The space was not well conveyed here. I did like the minecart part, but I'm a sucker for minecarts.
I did. Yeah, I mean, I thought that part was fun. I thought it was a unique way to fight the boss. Ultimately it just didn't pan out. It wasn't done very well.
Each of the sections of the Tower of Spirits is separated by a lengthy stair climbing sequence. And this is mechanically uninteresting. It's really just climbing a large spiral staircase as Link. But I will say it's visually a little bit interesting because the camera angle changes as you go up it. It's got this sort of disorienting spiral... a camera angle going for it. These were not originally in the game, but were added really late in development at Aonuma's request during his kind of final pass on the game, because he felt like the Tower of Spirits didn't have a true sense of scale and height unless Link had to travel between the floors for a pretty long period of time. I don't know what I think about that. Like, on the one hand, it slows the game down, and this is a game that is already very slow-paced. But on the other hand, he's right. You know, the Tower of Spirits feels tall because of those sections between it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if they, like, you know, nip and tuck some other areas of the game and allow this one to be longer, then maybe that's just like, oh, then... Because as we said, it just felt like a slowdown.
Yeah. Yeah, it would feel better if the train sequences were not so long.
Or just non-existent.
Jasmine, did you want to walk us through the collectibles and minigames?
Sure. I didn't really do this, but yeah, there's like way too many collectibles. There's like 16 different types.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's, and, you know, ranging from, like, you know, real basic kind of crap treasure to, like, really expensive, fancy treasure.
Yeah, it kind of feels like this is a follow-up. I mean, number one, it's a follow-up on The Wind Waker, which introduced all of these treasure things. But even right. more so, it's a follow-up and doubling down on the Phantom Hourglass, which got rid of things like bottles you could acquire or pieces of heart.
Oh, yeah.
And replaced right. them with these treasures that, you know, they're just not as fun a reward.
I was actually about to say, like, not. Was it just me that I just found it so pointless to collect these treasures? First of all, I was like, why is the treasure here? Like, it didn't really make sense as to, like, when I was just traversing through the dungeons, like, oh, I pick up X treasure here, bee larvae.
Right.
Whatever it is, I'm like, why is this relevant? Why did this... Like, in Wind Waker, at least, when you're collecting treasure, you're using the crane.
Yeah.
And you're picking up things from, like, from the old world. So I'm like, that's kind right. of cool. Here, right. it's just like, oh, someone left a Stalfos skull here, or someone left, I don't know, a pearl necklace. Like, who's going to right. get a pearl necklace in a flaming dungeon?
Yeah, it's a little half-baked.
It is. I actually ended up, when I realized that all the chests were just treasures like that in the dungeons, I skipped Same. Them. I was like, I'm not going to go out of my way for these, I don't care. Yeah. They're just not that interesting. Because the only thing that they're used for is to modify your train yep. so that you can, like, get different themes.
Yeah, some of my favorites here, I didn't engage with this in the game, but I had looked up all the different themes after the fact, and a few right. of my favorites were skull theme, sweet theme, and stagecoach theme, which yes. were kind of charming.
Yeah. They had all sorts of different kind of cute things. I think I went for the wooden one because that was the one that I had the most stuff.
Oh, cool.
That was easiest to collect. If you get all the same theme, it gives you 6 hearts for your
train. Oh, that makes sense. It's a lot like the boat in Phantom Hourglass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, but I didn't really go for anything fancy. I just went for the wooden one because it was easiest.
Yeah, this game is already so long and slow-paced, it was a tough sell to try to seek out things to modify my train.
Yeah, exactly. You can combine them?
What's that?
Oh, it just says produced by combining.
Oh, yeah, this is just, you effectively already covered this. That was just the idea of, like, you acquire these through through collecting treasure and turning them in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry about that. Yeah, you can just skip that.
No, that's all right.
We can probably move on to the stamp rally.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, so Nico, who's still alive.
Yeah, he's the only member of Tetra's pirate crew yes. that's still alive 100 years later. And it's kind of weird that yes. he's still alive 100 years later when there have been several generations of other characters.
Is he like 120?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Or something. Like, wow, dude. Yeah. But he hasn't seen the world and he wants you to collect these stamps for him.
Yeah.
So often at towns or temples, you know, inside dungeons, there'll be these little stamps that you can collect. And in your little stamp book, and he'll give you prizes based on how many you collected.
Yeah, I never managed to collect enough stamps. I collected a few, but what kind of prizes do you get? Do you know, Jasmine?
I know that if you get 10, he'll give you a shield that cannot be eaten by the like-likes.
Oh, Lord, that would be useful. I had to exit a dungeon at one point because my shield got eaten by a like-like and needed to traverse back to finding a shield somewhere and then back to the dungeon, which, of course, was interminable.
Yes.
Yeah, this would have been a useful tool for that.
Yeah. So, I can't remember what the 15 stamp treasure is, but if you get all the stamps, I think you get the spin attack.
Oh, cool.
Or an upgrade.
Like an upgraded spin attack, probably.
Like an upgraded or something like that. Like, oh, okay.
Oh, neat.
But I didn't bother to get those. A lot of them were out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, some of them are, you know, right along your path, and then some of them require you to complete a puzzle or explore more thoroughly to find, and the latter I never really sought out.
Nope, me neither. And then they have this other mini game, which I didn't do very much of, because I found it personally quite annoying.
Yeah.
It was Rabbit Land. And there's this guy. Okay, this whole thing doesn't make sense. Okay, can I just say that? This thing is stupid, okay? This guy wants to rescue the poor bunnies from being out in the wild so they can live their safe, happy lives or something like that. And I'm like, dude, they're fine.
Yeah, like they're just they're hanging out.
They're supposed to be.
They're all right.
What are you even talking about? So apparently I think there's like 10 of each kind of bunny or something.
Yeah, and
like
each of the four realms, I suppose.
Right. And you have to find them as you're traversing the countryside on the train tracks. You'll see them appear behind a boulder, and you shoot the boulder, and you get a chance to catch them with the net, but it tends to be really obnoxious because the net is so slow. Yep. You tap it, and it takes a second to come down, and by then, the rabbit has moved on.
Yeah, it's like, by the time that they've stopped moving, and you can activate the net, it'll be too late, so you need to kind of predict where they're going to be at.
Right.
But they don't stop moving at regular intervals, so there's just kind of a random chance that you'll get them or miss.
Right, exactly. So, honestly, I just gave up after a while, because I was like, I ain't got time for this.
Yeah, this apparently it came into the game just from an idle conversation that folks were having around the office. One of the developers was just a rabbit enthusiast and speculated about a mini game where Link captures rabbits. That's the origin of this, and it's not surprising that it's never made a reappearance in a later Zelda game.
I was about to say, so glad that circulated around the office.
Yeah.
I wish it had been something interesting. Oh, sorry.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, there's...
I would have rather it was cat collecting, but hey, that's...
Wouldn't that be nice?
Or dog collecting. That would be cute.
Yeah.
I'm much more into cats and dogs than rabbits.
And then you can decorate the car or the train with them.
Yeah.
Like have them on
and hang out with you. Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, I'm not trying to harsh the mellow of anybody who's into rabbits. Like, don't get me wrong.
No.
You know, they're wonderful creatures and I love seeing them outside my front door. But, you know, as a gameplay mechanic, it leaves something to be desired.
Yeah, it does. So I suppose you get prizes, but I don't actually know what they are.
Neither do I.
Money?
Yeah, I don't think we'll cover it.
I think if the listeners sounds are really good. That intent on catching some rabbits, they'll pick up the game. They'll do it.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the person hearing this who is like, you know, but they talked about the rabbits. Like, what do you get if you collect them? Like,
you know, like now they're fired up. They're like, oh my gosh, anything else? Whatever. This game is whatever, but the rabbit collecting.
I heard about these rabbits, and now I'm ready to play Spirit Tracks.
A+.
Yeah. Our next clip offers a little bit more information on the localization choices of Spirit Tracks.
Let's see, I couldn't find a whole lot of information on Cole. His name was Kimaroki, which is a shortened name of a train that was specifically used for snow removal.
Huh.
For removing snow on tracks, on railroad tracks. And let's see. Alfonso is actually, I can see how they named him after Gonzo, but actually his name is Shirokuni, which is from the JNR class C-62, which 6 is Roku and 2 is Ni, and you would say C in Japanese like she, so Shirokuni, C-62.
What? So in this case, they just eschewed the train motif entirely for this character and just named him after a Wind Waker character.
Yes,
whereas in the original one, his name had no connection to the Wind Waker character. He just resembled the Wind Waker character but had a train related name.
Yeah,
that is quirky.
He's named after a train, but in the English version they called him after Gonzo, I think.
Yeah,
so that's interesting. Let's see some other interesting things. For some reason, the Tower of Spirits is actually the Tower of God.
Uh-huh. Well, I see why they changed that.
Well, I guess it's more censorship, I guess. I don't know.
Well, they probably don't want to get into the whole... Sorry, go ahead.
Religious...
Well, so theoretically, yes, but it's worth remembering that in Twilight Princess, they do make reference to Ganon as a god in the Twilight Realm in that. So Nintendo had at some point started allowing references to God in their work.
Yeah.
I guess just not in this case.
Maybe this one just changed. They didn't like a Tower of Babel type thing. Maybe they just didn't want to.
Yeah, there is a more specific cultural connotation there. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It seems very Christian to have a Tower of God. Not saying anything against it, obviously, but I just... They might want to, like... They just say, like, it's a god. It's like, oh.
Yeah, that is different, isn't it? Yeah, it's very slightly different language-wise. Twilight Princess was also, if memory serves, rated teen. A rare Zelda game rated teen. Whereas this was rated everyone. In the West. Okay. So, you know, maybe they were considering who they were directing it to.
Is it Babel or Babel?
Okay. Babel.
Okay.
It's like the word Babel.
Okay. Yeah, it's where the English word Babel comes from.
Yep, Babel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Ask me about language. I know a lot about
language. I was about to say, let's change that before it gets to the final edit, because I'm going to say Babel, and people are just like, dude, really?
Huh? What's Babel?
In this outtake, we talk about one of the interesting anti-piracy features of the game. Finally, I did just want to drop this little piece of trivia concerning concerning anti-piracy measures for the original Spirit Tracks. Yeah. Particularly because, you know, this is a video game podcast largely about the history of the medium and its evolution by way of certain game franchises. And so I wanted to inject a little bit of historical context here. The Nintendo DS era had a ton of problems with piracy, because the original Nintendo DS had very few anti-piracy measures, and these little flash cartridges that could store, you know, dozens upon dozens of DS games and just run them directly, having been downloaded from a computer. Nintendo started to implement some pretty intense anti-piracy features on specific game software during the second half of the DS lifecycle. Sometimes these are just things where the game would crash, you know, not very interesting, but then other times they would institute strange little measures that would make the games unplayable. In the case of Spirit Tracks, if the DS detects that the game is a pirated copy, the train UI disappears while moving the train around the overworld, which makes it so Link can't determine a route or switch between different train tracks. And so you just get stuck going in a circle if you're playing a pirated copy of the game.
Not too much different from the actual game.
it saves you a lot of time, really.
Yep.
But anyway, I thought that was a pretty fun fact.
That is. That's really interesting.
That is interesting.
Like that stuff.
Yeah. Our final outtake is an extended version of our final impressions on the game.
I mean, this is the first time I've ever played this. I literally skipped this game because, you know, I've been playing these games for 30 years. I skipped this game when it first came out because I was like, or at that and Phantom Hourglass, because apparently they got good reviews, but I looked at them and I went, nope.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play those. And I was right. I was right not to play them.
Yeah, I'm fascinated that they reviewed well at the time.
I was looking it up.
Especially Spirit Tracks. Yeah, because...
like an 87 on Metacritic.
Yeah, and I have no idea why. Like, it looks nice.
Right.
It looks gorgeous for a DS game, and it sounds good, but, like, good gracious, you have to play it. It's not a movie.
I'm about to say, like, I think that they just looked at it, and they're just like, it looks pretty. I'll give it a big score.
Yeah, and like you said, Jasmine, it has some cool ideas. Like, the using the microphone is not an inherently bad idea, but... it's just maddening in practice. It's so imprecise. As we talked about, it's overly sensitive on the DS. It is undersensitive on the Wii U. And it's so overused as to slow the game down to a crawl anytime you want to do anything.
Yeah.
Oh, I should note as well, as far as the pacing, one of the things that started to drive me a bit batty as the game went on is the degree to which impediments were placed in your path as you try to get to each dungeon. Because inevitably, it reminded me actually of nothing more than the lead-up to City in the Sky in Twilight Princess, where, you know, Link needs to complete a variety of inane tasks in order to get to the next step of his journey. Except in this case, it happened between at least three of the temples. So anytime you think that you're just on the cusp of getting to another interesting section of gameplay in a dungeon, three more obstacles appear in your path that you need to resolve.
Yes.
Yeah, just
usually done with the train, which is not
absolutely. Yeah, all of the obstacles take, you know, well over 2 hours to complete.
I think that's kind of what we just mentioned before. The biggest problem for me, and just maybe many other people, is just the fact that this game is boring and a slog.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, it's not something that I often say about a Zelda game. Like, even generally, their problems are interesting problems. Not here. Just boring.
Yeah, it's like a game that you play just to play it. There's no entertainment.
Right, yeah.
You're just finishing it.
Yes, exactly. Right? It's a thing to do with your hands if you have nothing else to do.
Right.
If you have nothing else to do. No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
It is. It's kind of sad. It's really sad to review a Zelda game so badly.
I know, and on your first episode as a permanent host, Jasmine. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that this is what you came in on, but it's all up from here, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, wait till Skyward Sword. I have so much for Skyward Sword.
Yeah, yes, me too.
We're going to start that today. I'm actually literally looking forward to it. I know that a lot of different people have a lot of different views, but...
Sure, yeah, it's got its problems, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But...
I think it's fun. I have fun with it.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all for this bonus episode of Franchise Festival. Be sure to let us know what you think by reaching out via email at franchisefestival@gmail.com or by contacting our official Twitter handle @franchise_fest. As ever, folks, thanks for listening. Goodbye.